Welcome to a new episode of Behind the Smiles. Regional directors Morgan and Indiana talk about how we're improving access to safe, quality surgery for individuals with cleft and other surgical treatable conditions. Indiana shares local solutions that have worked in countries she oversees, Nicaragua, the Dominican Republic, and Guatemala. Morgan details our partnership with a regional hospital in Madagascar and shares how it has benefited from other countries she oversees, such as Mozambique, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Rwanda. Morgan and Indiana are excited to be creating a roadmap that other organizations can follow to improve access to surgery around the world.
Hello, my name is Indiana Siu, and I'm the Regional Director for Guatemala, Nicaragua, and Dominican Republic.
And my name is Morgan Bober. I'm the Regional Director for Madagascar, Mozambique, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Rwanda. Your role at Operation Smile has changed in the last couple of months, and so maybe, and you obviously have the opportunity to work with patients on a more regular basis than I do, but maybe tell me a little bit about what you're doing for Operation Smile now.
So before, well, you know, I used to be the executive director for the foundation in Nicaragua, but it has been a hard transition because also like that approach with patients on a daily basis was just so like engaging for me. Mm-hmm. But then I also said, like, how can I do more for these people? How can I do more for the organization? And this is an organization that has, I have been at least 10 years and it grows on you. And every time, like, I even get a job offer, like, I burst into tears and I'm like, I just can't leave this. And if I ever leave this, which I don't think it's going to be soon, but I say, like, I hope my other job acknowledges that 20% of my time is going to be with Operations.
We're never going to let you go.
But, well, this new role is in a regional approach, and I think that just gives us an opportunity to maximize and just, like, work for the whole region and unify the world. Like, it's, once again, it's a global family, and I think that we're in a great position where we could enhance that and just connect. And, well, one of the perks of the right now the title and the position is to work with people I have worked like with you, actually. Yeah. It has been really fun. And I look back, it seems like it has been forever. But I see back and I just see, like, we're still this amazing organization that's just, like, working towards, like, delivering care around the world. So, yeah. I don't know. It's, I just hope that we could be a better service for whole globe and for the organization and patients.
So one of the ways that the organization has started to take kind of that sentiment to heart is through global essential surgery projects. And you've had the opportunity to work really closely with our project in Nicaragua. Maybe talk a little bit about that experience and what that project is attempting to do.
So at first, when they first told me about safe surgery, I began laughing. I just said, like, at some point, okay, safe surgery, what? Like, is it instruments? Is it protocols? Like, it's such a big thing.
Sure.
But because I didn't, like, wrap my head around, like what we did, because you get so used to creating safe environments for our missions, mm-hmm. that at some point you miss that you're always doing that. Yeah. So I said, like, oh, my God, now I need to, like, create this huge thing. And at some point that overwhelmed me. But then after a week of giving a thought, I said, well, we don't go to every single hospital. We actually go to hospitals that provide the best care for our patients. And one of the things that sticks with me all the time is just because our patient doesn't pay for our treatment, deserve any treatment, they actually deserve the best treatment. So I think that right now with global surgery, it's just great that, and I got to understand it like this, that we have that experience of providing safe surgery, well, safe surgery in safe environments. Mm-hmm. I was like, how can we get that and just put it into a hospital? And not to the service of only the cleft, but also to the service of anybody who's seeking care. And the numbers, when I see this, hear the statistics, it's just terrifying that.
It's so hard to wrap your head around even.
But then I felt like, oh my God, we're this organization that does cleft. And how can we help? And I think that And it's such amazing that you and I get to work it through the globe trying to promote this new idea and this new like type of care. Like, we're lucky. I think that not everybody gets the chance, but well, we're tremendously lucky to just be working together, but also at the service of something bigger than we have been doing.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. It's been, I think for me, I studied human rights and global development in college. And so as we've started thinking about not just our cleft patients, but also patients all over the world who need different kinds of surgery and who don't have access to it, whether they can't afford it, whether they can't get to a hospital, whether they don't have time, whether, you know, their culture doesn't provide the education around what is, you know, what is surgery or why would I need surgery and when do I need it? Those kinds of, I don't know, experiences and challenges, being able to overcome them and help patients understand what is surgery and why is it important and, you know, how do I access it is so interesting. And it's, for me, it's been really, kind of brings me back to a lot of what I studied in college and a lot of kind of that just like deep-seated like desire to help people and to change like an entire like context around, you know, human rights.
And what do you think would be like the main thing, like the immediate thing that you need to like dive in as in global surgery for patients to begin at least accessing basic care? Like, because we have the components of like space stuff and systems, but like what would you think like is the immediate?
Well, it's something we've talked a lot about in Madagascar. We're working, so it's a little bit different from the project in Nicaragua because we're working just at one hospital. And so we've been talking about it really for a couple of years, started working around this kind of an idea. And in the last maybe 6 months, we've really started to formulate some structure to it. But it's really hard to ask that, to answer that question, because everything kind of relates to itself. So like, you know, our first instinct was, oh my gosh, this hospital doesn't have fully functioning anesthesia machines. How can they be providing safe surgery if they're not providing anesthesia? But to have functioning anesthesia machines, you have to have like consistent and reliable provision of electricity and oxygen. And so then it was like, well, anesthesia machines is like really, you know, maybe one example of an immediate need. But you can't do that right if you don't have the foundation established at the hospital or in within the system. And so then we were like, okay, it's got to be utilities. We need to do electricity. We need to do oxygen. We need to kind of revamp these systems within the hospital. But when you talk about something like electricity, you're not just talking about the hospital. You're talking about the entire like system within Madagascar of the electricity provision and like the national grid for electricity. These are ideas that go so far over my own head, but you know, there's kind of this like series of effects and there's, you know, so we've spent a lot of time looking at something we call sequencing and deciding, you know, which piece needs what other foundational elements and, you know, where can you really start? So I don't have a clear answer for you other than to say that we know we need to start with hospital infrastructure and medical equipment, making sure that those resources are available for the hospital as kind of like a foundation. And then from there, we want to also engage in looking at, you know, is there enough staff and do they have the right skill sets to provide the types of surgeries that the hospital's catchment area, the patients who most frequently go to this hospital, that they have available? Do they have orthopedic surgeon? Do they have orthopedic supplies? Making sure, you know, those kinds of things. Does he have the skills to use the supplies that are available? But then kind of a word I keep using, systems, is something that underlies all of this. So you can't look at any one piece in isolation. You know, if you buy a piece of equipment, there has to be training to go with it. If you hire a new staff member, a new surgeon, you have to have training for that person. There has to be data management for all of it. There has to be financial management of all of it. So it's this like very complex concept. And it's been, you know, we've kind of spent years at this point, and I think you're probably in a similar boat, trying to really understand it and how all of these pieces come together. I think from discussions I've heard from you and others about the project in Nicaragua, one of the differences in Madagascar is patient financing. And, you know, there is no provision right now of universal health coverage in Madagascar from the government. So patients pay for every service or every like consumable or supply that they receive from the hospital in order for any medical service to be provided. And so like that underlies everything that we're trying to do, because we may buy state-of-the-art equipment, we may, you know, completely revamp the utilities at the hospital, but if no matter what we do on the availability side of surgery and those surgical services being possible, if patients can't come to the hospital and can't afford those services when they arrive at the hospital, then we've still done nothing to touch making safe surgery, making essential surgery more accessible for patients. So,
and do you think that, for example, in Nicaragua, something that has been really successful has been the community health workers. One of the main things has been that it's not only within the patient, but the hospital responsibility to keep following up on treatment, but engage in patients at a certain level where somebody actually goes out of their way, calls you, cares for you. As have you, what do you think about your surgery like a month ago? So those things are really important. I don't know if it's available or are you guys going to be able to develop a system towards patient engagement, but that's been something really crucial for Nicaragua. Do you think that would be happening in Madagascar?
I think it's going to be essential. I don't think we yet know exactly the shape that will take, because we're spending some time understanding who is already providing those kinds of services within the region that we're working in. But maybe I think it would be really helpful for us if you were able to tell us a little bit more about, you know, what those community health workers are doing in Nicaragua. You've kind of already shared a short like summary, but yeah, like maybe tell us a little bit more.
So one of the main things has been that how can we make surgery accessible for patients? Like how would they understand the language? Most of the time you even say cleft and they don't, that's not the regular language that they use. So at what point you make it engaging for them? So one of the things that we have come up with has been the surgical manual of diseases, diseases, but surgical manual as a manual, where they actually have like pictures, like how does a bump or hernia, I don't know how to say that in English, but how does that look like? If like if it hurts from 1 to 3, if it's a 3, it's something that you could barely move, that has to be quickened, like shifted to a hospital, whereas in 1 and it could be like digestion or something, but like identifying things and make it simple, but not only for community health workers, but also for like leaders in communities, like midwives, like those people who actually people have trust in them. How can they convey the message of you need a treatment, we're here for you? So one of those, that thing, that manual, I think is going to be just crucial for the whole project. And I'm eager like to see how it did roll out in Nicaragua, but what if even like because of the culture, like how that's gonna translate into a Madagascar format? Yeah, and that's something that I don't know, blows my mind, but I think that it's so important. I think that no other organization is targeting also like the project in that sense. Like how do you identify on a primary level?
Well, I think it's one of those opportunities from this kind of work that Operation Smile is doing to actually affect and to impact a much wider population, because it doesn't have to be a tool that we use just within Operation Smile in Nicaragua or in Madagascar or even other Operation Smile offices, but it's something that we could share, you know, globally, that people all over the world who are trying to provide better access to safe surgery are able to utilize. And so like this kind of a project that Operation Smile is working on actually has a really far-reaching impact, or at least the potential for that impact.
And when you think about it, like even for your family, like we work in a organization that provides health, but then you get to know, you're not a doctor, but you get to know the language and identify some of the things that are happening. Like even when my mom was going to get surgery, I'm like, who, why, when, where? Did you wash your hands? And what type of brand you're using? Right. It gets down to specifics, but like even we have accessible care, we have accessible surgeries, and we're still into that. And I could just imagine like providing that same care for that person, that people in the community. And like at some point, how am I going to say this? Like providing like the best care, like if it's your own.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important and crucial. Like they're out there or they're part of us.
Absolutely. Well, it's kind of the essence of why we have global standards of care too, yes. Right? Because our global standards are meant to say that, you know, what, because of my own background, because of where I happen to have been born in the U.S., that the quality of care that I receive, that the quality of care that you receive for surgery at home in Nicaragua, that the quality of, is the same as the quality of care in China, in Bolivia, in Madagascar, in Jordan, you know, all over the world, that we're providing the same quality of care. And in our case for Operation Smile, that's specifically for cleft patients. But it's such an opportunity to make sure that that is also true for many other types of surgery. And I think, you know, we have a lot of lessons that we've learned within the Operation Smile family that we can share, and we almost have the obligation, I think, to share.
Hey, talking about that, what's your biggest lesson?
What's my biggest lesson? Oh, I might have to
we have been
sit
all
on that
around,
one
right?
for a while. Yeah. That's a really tough question. I mean, I guess maybe the power of teamwork. It's kind of the first thing that's coming to mind.
Yeah.
Just in the sense of, you know, you can talk about any one story, any one patient, but there really is a whole village, a whole world behind that surgery being possible.
One of the things that really caught my mind when I began the organization, like I have worked with organizations that have had volunteers before. Sure. But they have like a 1 week volunteer where they do great good. They go engage the world. But something that blew my mind is that we actually have 6,000 volunteers around the globe, but that set aside vacation time and all the time they can, which they should be partying. That's per se that or being on vacations. But no, they set aside to just help and dedicate their skills to just providing in this great world. And something I think that also blow my mind is like they're not changing the world in a humongous kind of way, but we're being consistent, we're being everywhere, we're being like spread it out, we're trying to just like push all of the region towards this goal of just having this world the power of a smile and even take that for away from that, like it's not only engaging in a smile, but you have all these incredible volunteers mm-hmm. where the ultimate goal is that this patient feels like the same as the other patient, and maybe and probably the only thing that distinguishes them is a simple scar, but like they have the same capacity. Oh my God, we have a lot to do, right?
We sure do. We better get back to work, Indiana.
We appreciate you taking the time to learn more about the work our regional directors do to improve access to safe surgery and quality healthcare around the world. If you're interested in donating or getting involved, click the link in the episode description. Let us know you're listening by screenshotting the episode and posting it on your story with the hashtag #BehindTheSmiles. You may get a shout out on our social media channels or in the next episode. You can find more great stories about our work on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Operation Smile. Finally, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. We put out new episodes every other Wednesday.